Mr. Pierce, Master Pierce, what am I calling him this go-round? I am calling him, he's not Commodore. No, I know what he is. I think I said this yesterday that I looked up titles. He's Lord Chamberlain Pierce. Lord Chamberlain. It's like being a Lord Chamberlain is like being a four-star general in this man's army. We've got a lot to talk about here today, and we'll get it all started with a weather update. There was a massive snowstorm that clobbered the Midwest yesterday. 1,000-some-odd cars. A massive snowstorm that clobbered big parts, swaths of the Midwest with 100-mile-per-hour winds. And now it was supposed to start as rain, but it didn't start as rain. Or I guess it did start as rain and then turned into snow. And then people were struggling trying to get home in the Denver, Colorado area and all got stranded on the highway. Here's what's interesting about this. So today's March the 14th, we're exactly 1 week away from the spring equinox, as they call it. So, Mitter, please, what the spring? Did I say Mitter? I'm sorry, I identified. I am so sorry. Interchur, please. The spring equinox is when the seasons change. So on the 21st of March, we will go from winter to spring. And there will be a subtle change in weather patterns and what have you. But it's supposed to start getting warmer, right? Temperatures start to rise, things start to melt. I have a friend whose son works on the Mississippi River on a transport, I guess it's a transport barge. They push other barges. It's a crew boat that pushes barges down the Mississippi River. And he said already this year, some of the captains are freaking out because they've never seen this much water this early. Now, some people are going to go, Interchar, plea. The reason they're seeing so much is because of global warming is not knowing. Well, no, it's the exact opposite because there have been such a massive record snowfall already, especially in those areas that empty into the Mississippi. The runoff in the few warm spells that have occurred, the runoff that has happened has already put more water into the river than anyone can remember seeing at this time. What does that mean? That means the snowfall increase. The snow mass, snowpack, as they call it, that the snow mass has actually increased this year. Now, wait a minute. I thought Ocasio-Cortez told us we only had 12 years left to live. By the by. My name is Al Gore, and when I'm not out busy making Oscar-winning film documentaries and winning Nobel Peace Prizes, I'm warning the world about the end. And in 2000, I said that the world had a decade. Oh, wait a minute. People have short attention spans. Am I the only one that... Members. Member? Bush Gore 2000 was one of Al Gore's big things that he ran on. One of his big platforms. Stopping.
We have to fight the climate, David. Global.
What now? That's about the time Inconvenient Truth came out, and at that time it was not called climate change. These frauds called it global warming. We are all going to die. Remember, I wrote a couple songs about it. It's giant. The earth is on fire. It's going to set itself on fire. And by the by, ask anyone that lives in International Falls, Minnesota, if they can survive an ice age. Meaning the entire world covered by a pack of ice. Well, most of the world covered by a pack of ice. They're going to say, we gone. How about no? can't survive. So why is it, or how is it, that we only have 12 years to survive? And how does this former bartender, how does she put so fine of a point on it? Are you sure it's 12 or is it 11 and a half? Are you sure it's 12 or is it 12 years, 5 months? Can you actually give us the amount of days, Mr. Ocasio-Cortez? This is nothing but another fleece job that our elite ruling masters are going to give another go at a massive carbon tax. Last time they tried this is when Nancy Pelosi was speaker in 2006. It went all the way up until 2009. And even though the Democrats, the Democrats controlled the Congress, they fell two votes short of the carbon tax. By the by, who is the biggest promoter of the carbon tax, the tax and trade scam, in the U.S. Senate at the time? Do you remember? Remember? John McCain.
Well, we're all going to die in global warming anyway. Scare everybody. We're all screwed. Scared. We're going to pass this cap and trade.
Scam. Whole thing. Funding scam. Same thing that's happening today. The amazing thing is the capacity for human beings to forget how stupid they were in the past and to repeat the same stupid, dumb mistake.
Welcome to America 2019.
Here's a headline. More than 1,000 drivers stranded in Colorado Springs area. Colorado Springs. Let me play Cleavon Little from Blazing Saddles. Colorado Springs. Where do I know that name? Colorado Springs. Well, it's where some of you go to, I believe there is a church there that hosts the weekly extraordinary form of the Latin Mass. That's one thing. What else is it known for? Isn't there a third trimester Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs? I know that there's a couple in Denver, but I'm fairly certain that there's also one in Colorado Springs. By the by, did anyone see this story last week that a member of the Colorado House of Representatives has revived those 5 out of 11 counties that voted to secede back in 2010 from the state of Colorado, has revived the secession ordinances that passed and is demanding that the full legislature acknowledge that they were passed? So that those counties, the county that she's from, I want to say her last name is Marple, I want to say. I read the story last week. So that she said that so that county can pursue leaving the state and forming its own. Why? They don't want to be in league with the maniacs, the dope-smoking, infanticidal maniacs in Denver. Another reason, by the by... If you're a Denver football Broncos fan, to give that another thought. More than 1,000 drivers stranded in Colorado Springs area. Governor Paulus declares state of emergency as bomb cyclone paralyzes Front Range, is the headline. Snow driven by winds approaching 100 miles an hour. Shut down schools, highways, air travel. I have a question. Intercotter. Did he shut down the Planned Parenthood clinic? I wonder if the aborticidal maniacs made it into work that day. Hey, we are streaming live on YouTube today, free o' charge. Live and free, which means ultimately that someone in our chat room, probably someone whose name I will not mention, Jeff Shepard, will probably go and say, "What, Clark? No TKD, no YouTube today, Clark." Did I say that out loud? The rapidly intensifying storm known as a bomb cyclone. Now, what's a bomb cyclone, Walter? Caused whiteout conditions for drivers caught in its fury and prompted the governor to call out the National Guard and El Paso County to declare an emergency. Officials pleaded with people to stay home and off the road. So why is that? Who wants to go out in this insanity? You know, from what I know of the average American person and a Sherson out there, they're going to use any excuse they can to not go to work, or work in air finger quotation marks. There's a couple of more headlines that I find fascinating here, given we've only 12 years to live. Now, can someone ask
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez?
I was telling Yacoub, I said, when you and Barrett play that soundbite of her going like,
"This isn't Venezuela, it will be."
She has a very shrill, she is annoying to listen to. She is a high-pitched, shrill voice. It's almost like hearing Hillary, rather. Let me throw another weather bulletin at you. Greenpeace founder, global warming hoax pushed by corrupt scientists, hooked on government grants. Gee, I wonder where I've heard that before. Your time starts now, Roger. Best of luck. Well, I can tell you where you've heard it. From the founder of Climate Depot, Mark Morano, here as a guest on this show a couple of dozen times. You heard it from me. I've been telling you this, folks, there's nothing new under the sun. This is people that don't want to have to work, don't want to have to pick up vocations, don't want to actually have to perform anything other than fleecing their fellow human beings for their own existence. Speaking of, I'm going to get into this in the second hour of the broadcast today. Do you remember now the college entrance exam? What did you call this thing? Were the actresses, were their names Hutchinson and what was the other one? I have the story in the pile here. The husband, the wife, Mr. or Mrs. William H. Macy. They bribe these people at these Ivy League schools, right? These administrators and athletic directors and what have you, to let their imbecilic, untalented, and unskilled darlings into the universities and what have you. This story has taken a most interesting turn. And the turn that it's taken... I found this on Rod Dreher's blog yesterday. Then I followed this guy, and where is it? Here it is. Now, ordinarily, I throw this out. This dude is the editor of Time Magazine, Anand Gerharadas, or Gerharadas. Here's what he said about the indictment of the college entrance exam scammers. Those elite ruling masters that don't think they should play by the rules the rest of us are forced to play by, right? The indictment should spark a larger conversation. As we know, many of the central players in impact investing, while helping others, actually increase their share of the global pie every year. Their power grows more, not less concentrated. They do really well by doing good. And then this guy focuses on his friend of Bonehead, the lead man for the infanticidal maniac rock group, U2. This guy's name is Bill McGlashan. He's an investor. Here's the tweet storm. Now listen to this. I'm reading this, just shaking my head, going, "These bastards, these bastards." What is alleged in this scheme is that someone who claimed to be working to change the system, change capitalism, empower others, help others rise, was working downstream to lock others out of a slot they perhaps deserved, but that would instead go to their kid. This story brings it home, and more than the celebrities, for me, it's Bill McGlashan. McGlashan, who epitomizes, now listen to this, the modern fantasy that the rich people who rigged the modern world, who monopolized the American dream for themselves, are the solution to redressing our injustices. And then he writes, when this reporter at the Wall Street Journal called me about TPG and Bonehead back in general, TPG is this investment group that's involved where the dude, the guy at the center of all this, where he was either the founder or the co-founder, but he was one of the dudes that was raking in hundreds of millions a year. When a reporter from the Wall Street Journal called me about TPG and Bonehead in January, I said, what Bonehead is doing is legitimizing the idea that the best way to solve the world's problems is in ways that don't threaten, listen to this, the powerful, that allow them to stay on top, avoid paying taxes, and then give a little back. And now, one of the absolute deans of the doing well by doing good industrial complex, a man who embodied the faith that the meek of the earth could be saved by private equity barons, has been indicted for rigging the opportunity structure against the disadvantaged. I mean, if you try to parse this to your head and try to figure this out, what you wind up, a young Yaku was asking me, he was like, because I read these tweets to him earlier, and he goes, I don't get it, because it doesn't make any sense. I said, sure it does. What's going on here is that what the elite ruling masters are basically campaigning to do, and then what they're actually acting upon is there. What an irony. What an irony. I thought we got rid of the divine right of kings. Do you remember? What an irony that they're actually acting upon what they think is their divine right. That they are so smart, they are so rainbow flag spangled awesome, that the world needs them. Yesterday when I played the clip from Matt Stone and Trey Parker's brilliant but filthy, absolutely vulgar and disgusting, filthy, still funny in some ways, Team Marika movie, about what the world needs now is people that are wealthy and really care, namely us, the actors. So what this was a scam to do, it's not a coincidence that the people at the center of this were celebrities, and that the people at the center of this were very wealthy people that were kind of like financial market celebrities. What they basically were scheming to do, and what their basic plan is, and what their life statement, if they had to make one, is, everyone else is stupid, they're smart, smarter, that's why they have all this material wealth and success, and because they're so rainbow flag, spangled, awesome, and smart, they must be allowed to keep all their money. They shouldn't have to pay any taxes, and they shouldn't have to abide by any regulations on what they do with their money either, because you know why? You know why? You know why? You want to know why? You want to know why? Because they're always, because they're them, they're always in their enlightened, you see. They're woke. They're always going to make the right decision on just what peasant or what stupid peasant cause needs helping. Now, if some peasant is actually about to escape poverty by virtue of their own actions and how hard they have worked, maybe they're trying to get into Harvard or USC or UCLA, and they're about ready to be admitted because of their test scores, we will then swoop in and let our Instagram darling daughter, who does not want to go to school, who wants to just go there for the party experience, we will then swoop in, bribe the administration and faculty, and we're going to steal that spot from the kid that worked for it. It doesn't get any more screwed up than this. I mean, just, but ladies and gentlemen, this is how evil works. It doesn't, I always say this. It doesn't sleep, doesn't take union breaks, doesn't abide by any of these rules. It's like the guy in the Terminator movie said, it doesn't sleep, doesn't take breaks, it absolutely will not stop ever until you are...
It can't be bargained with, it can't be reasoned with, it doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop
ever
until you are dead.
Until you be dead. One more headline before our... Master Pierce joins us on the Dude Maker Hotline. By the by, the first ever Joseph Pierce book fair going on today in the Founders Trading Post. All of these books are signed by Joseph. You know what's really cool about the way Joseph signs books? Whatever saint feast day it is, he signs Joseph Pierce, Blessed St. Thomas, or Feast of, or whatever. He always notes what feast day he signed it on. We have over 50 copies here in stock of six titles, including Literary Convert, Small is Still Beautiful, Literary Giants, Wisdom and Innocence, the biography of Chesterton, his biography of Tolkien, his biography of Oscar Wilde, one of his Shakespeare books, Through the Eyes of Shakespeare. We have all these books on sale at Joseph Pierce Book Fair today. If you buy two, 25% off, buy three, 33% off, buy five, get your six free. Sale, the book fair sale ends at 3 Eastern. MikeChurch.com/shop. If there's any justice, literary justice left in the world, there will not be a single Pierce book left for sale by the end of the day. Not one. Okay, our telephone number. Now look, this is open to anyone. Did we, what was my 50% off title for the top of the hour? Oscar Wilde? It should be gone, or is he still looking for a home? MikeChurch.com/shop. So, apparently, either A, Oscar Wilde is not popular, or what? Oh, so the next one up for half price, 50% off, signed by Lord Chamberlain Pierce. Lord Chamberlain Pierce. Signed by Lord Chamberlain Pierce is at MikeChurch.com/shop. Somebody was, hey, Claw, can you just give us the link directly to the book, Claw? No, I'm not going to give you the link directly to the book. It's a freaking treasure hunt. Have fun with it. Go browse around the site. You can find it. What's the subtitle to the Tolkien book? The Man in Mystery? Something to that effect? Well, he's on hold. I'll bring him on in just a moment. Man and Myth, that's what it is. One more headline. Thomas, as Richard Barrett likes to call him, Thomas Beto O'Rourke, has announced that he is in the race to be beaten, trounced by Donald Trump in 2020. And again, young Jakob and I were talking when the Barrett Brief was going on, and Richard was talking about this. And the Barrett Brief now on every weekday morning, 9 to noon, right here on the Crusade Channel. When this is going on, and Richard was saying, he doesn't want to be president. This is a vice president attempt, and what a great Veep candidate he would be, and you know, because he's from Texas and all that. And I told Yakub, I said, he lost to Ted Cruz. I want you to listen to me. I'm the most conservative candidate on the stage. Donald down there is a fraud. Said he lost to Ted Cruz. He will get pasted against the wall. He will be a piece of silly putty by the have the image of himself on the silly putty by the time Trump is finished with him. You know what? That video that's going around of that idiot sitting in the dentist chair with the dentist going, oh, I'm getting me to do this and any other. That kind of pain, that kind of a procedure without lidocaine, that's what you're in for.
Beto.
And every time I think of Beto, one more thing, and then we'll go to Lord Chamberlain Pierce. Every time I think of Beto, I think of Philo Beto. Now, that's your trivia question of the hour. Who is Philo Beto? One of you Sharpies is going to member this and is going to get it. Make you a deal. If you're the first one to get it, and if you shop in the first ever Joseph Pierce, Lord Chamberlain Pierce book fair that we're having at mikechurch.com/shop today, I'll throw in a free bookmark. One of those beautiful tasseled laminated bookmarks that we have. I don't know why they don't fly out of the store more often than they do. The bookmarks. No, I use bookmarks. I have, you know, I'm the only one that uses them. I probably have taken 30 of them out of here, and I got them in all my books. Okay. 844-527-8723. So the first ever Joseph Pierce book fair is going on in our store, mikechurch.com/shop. The discounts are just tremendous. As I said, 25% if you buy two Pierce books, 33% for three or more. Go ahead and buy five, and I believe there's seven titles in there, and your six is on the house. It's on us. Now, what Lord Chamberlain Pierce doesn't know is that all of these discounts, I'm going to back bill to him. So, you didn't get the memo on that, did you?
I didn't get the memo, and I need to say, Mr. Church, that finding my title of Lord Chamberlain a matter of jocularity and humor could get you in big trouble. People have had their heads chopped off for less than that. See, please take my peerage seriously.
You know what's funny about this, as I've gotten to know you, my dear friend, I've got to know you the last 4 years. When you're on hold, my cheeks get rosy, because I and Mrs. O'Connell, the producer who calls you, she's all in there. She's on pins and needles. She's smiling, and she's going to be imitating the famous Piercean laugh all the rest of the day.
Well, you've set me off now. You've set me off.
Because she said he has the most infectious laugh I've ever heard. So, first of all, welcome to 2019. So, we've talked this year. So, welcome back to 2019. A blessed Lent to you, Lord Chamberlain Pierce.
and to you too, my mere plebeian friend.
How is your Lent going? How are you faring thus far?
Doing so far, managing to lay off the booze, and I'm saying the penitential psalms daily. I don't manage much more than that because I'm a miserable loser.
God bless and God love miserable losers. Joseph, you've been on a writing roll, so I can tell in the last 2 weeks your output of the Imaginative Conservative has increased. So you must have laid off something and you have more time on your hands.
As my wife will tell you if you listen to her, that God has the power of multiplying time. So the busier I get, the more it seems to get done. It's amazing.
So your latest at the Imaginative Conservative is that now there's a question mark at the end of this. Is beauty in the eye of the beholder? And I'll let you answer that question, but I'll just give you an anecdote, and I think I've given it to you before. My Philosophia Perennis instructor, my mentor, brother Francis Malouf, in one of the lectures that he was giving on, I think it was on epistemology, I want to say, he was talking about beauty, because one of his lectures was about beauty, And he said something about beauty, but I'll never forget what came afterwards, kind of a joke. And he said, beauty is known in the natural world. No one stands at the base of the Matterhorn and looks up at it and says, oh, it's cute. So I've always kept that in mind about beauty and about Eye of the Beholder. So is it in the eye of the beholder?
No. Next question.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. I still got 1,200 words to go through here.
No, obviously, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder is one of those adages that's used so often that it's become a truism. The trouble is it's not true. And you know, people just accept it as being true because they hear it so often. In actual fact, it's emphatically not true. If beauty is in the eye of the beholder, it's ultimately saying there's no such thing as beauty. It's just what I personally prefer. You know, objectively speaking, if something's out there beyond me, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, and just in part, the transcendent aspect of beauty is present to an even greater degree in the primal part of creation, and that would fit in with the Matterhorn. No one goes on the Maid of the Mist on the Niagara River and looks up at the Horseshoe Falls and goes, oh, it's a sprinkler. You look at it and you marvel. It's one of the, to me... and we can get into a little bit of the philosophy behind it. To me, it's one of the beauty is one of those things that God programmed man and only man to have the ability in our intellect to behold.
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, you've heard me say this before on your show, I'm sure, but you know, the Greek word for man, anthropos, means he who looks up, as opposed to every other creature which doesn't look up. I mean, in other words, you know, an animal grazes, man gazes. An animal is confined and constrained by its instinct. That's all that it has, is instinct. Man looks up at the stars and wonders at the beauty of them. And so there's something about us which is transfigured by the experience of beauty. And that clearly is something which marks us as being made in the image of God, the great maker of all that is beautiful. In fact, the source of all beauty and the where all beauty leads is him. The mark of his image in us is the fact that we, unlike all other creatures, can actually experience the kiss of beauty and be transformed by it.
Yeah, and you write in this piece... In your essay, Is Beauty in the Eye of the Beholder? This is a really good example of this, or a good little thought experiment. Let's imagine that we put a Muslim, a Protestant, a Catholic, a Buddhist, and an atheist in the field in the middle of the night. Now, this is provided that if you don't convert, that the Muslim does not behead you during the night. So you got to make it through the night first.
Well, that's why the Muslim is facing the same way as you are. You wouldn't want to turn your back on him.
Yeah, that's right. So what happens at, I think is where you go with this, what happens at dawn?
Well, basically, if we sit him in that imaginary field in the middle of the night, in the dark, all facing the same way, which is east, then at some point they will see the color of the sky change, and they will see an indigo blue, just slightly brighter than dark at first, but then a sort of various hues, various shades of rose, you know, various shades of red will spread across the sky, and eventually, and I've experienced this myself, I actually wrote a poem called Solstice Sunrise about this. You can actually, you know, particularly in the summer, this was in England, but I'm sure it's exactly the same here, particularly midsummer when the sun rises really early, you can see it rise above the horizon, and it's like the Blessed Sacrament. It's white. It's as white as snow. You can look directly at it, and it's being elevated as if by, you know, as if by the divine priest himself. The host rises above us, and it's white, and you can look at it. And then it turns to red, and you can still look at it. And eventually, of course, it turns to gold, and you have to avert your gaze because it's too bright for us to see. And I actually, in my poem, saw parallels with the joyful, the sorrowful, and the glorious mysteries of the Rosary. So in the white, we see the joyful mysteries. In the red, of course, blood red, we see the sorrowful mysteries. And then In the gold of the sun, we see the glory. And, of course, the glory is so bright that this side of the veil of tears, we're seeing things through a glass darkly, we can't look directly at that glory. We have to, please God, attain that beatific vision through getting to heaven. So, you know, the point is just the experience of a single sunrise can leave us and lead us in that sort of meditation towards the divine. And that's the purpose of beauty, is to lift us up in prayer to God.
You know, that is so well put that I think I just want to have that printed out and framed and have it saved to put on my tombstone.
Thank you.
Now, where do you go to where you can see the white sun? I missed that part.
Well, I think basically, I mean, I actually had this particular experience of this particular sunrise, I mean. And the glorious thing about the sunrise and the sunset, of course, is, you know, it's God's art gallery, and we're given a different one every day. No sunrise is the same as any other one. No sunset's the same as any other one. They're all unique. So it's open to us. It's free if we have eyes to see. But this particular vision was a midsummer in England, probably 20 years ago, and that's what inspired my poem "Solstice Sunrise." But I'm not a meteorologist. I don't know what makes the sun appear these colours at what time of year, what sort of weather conditions. But it was midsummer, and I'm guessing that it's when the sun rises, very, very early in midsummer that you can have this experience. But for all I know, you can have any other times of the years. I don't know.
Joseph Pierce is the author of many, many books, and today now. I got to this late, but I told you about it earlier. Today is the first ever, I was going to say annual, but let's just make it a first ever, Joseph Pierce Book Fair. How do you like that?
I love that very much. I mean, it sounds very medieval, which is very appropriate for Lord Chamberlain. So yes, thank you very much.
And we have a fantastic sales going on all day. If you buy two Pierce autographed books, you get 25% off. If you buy three, we'll give you 33% off. If you buy five, we'll give you a six volume for free. So, wow. Yes, and then at the top of the...
Can I take a couple of dozen, please?
Yes, you...
And I'll send it back to you again a few weeks later.
Now, as soon as someone goes and snaps up a half-price, 50% off copy of Tolkien, The Man and the Myth, if that's still available, we replace it with another one. I'm not going to tell you which one it is until it's up, that we discount at half price to give everybody a chance to go treasure hunting and go get one of those volumes. But it's a book fair the old school way. You remember back when we were in high school and maybe even early days of university, libraries would often have author book fairs. I imagine there were many Chesterton book fairs. There were many Tolkien book fairs. There were probably still in places that have retained some holiness and sanity in Ireland. There are Oscar Wilde book fairs. This is something I think that fits in with that tradition that you and I and many others are trying to revive.
I'm all in favor of tradition, I'm all in favor of book fairs, and I'm all in favor of becoming rich by the number of books you sell as well. as long as I can still get through that eye of a needle at the end of my life, that would be fine.
Well, unfortunately, since you're sewn at the hip with me today on this, don't retire just yet. I would not retire the word processor just yet, my friend.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to be as big as a camel, so there might be a chance of me getting through that eye of a needle. I think I'm not doomed to be rich, and that's probably a blessing.
Of course, you're hearing the voice of Lord Chamberlain Joseph Pierce on the Dude Maker Hotline here with us. You know, you were mentioning the beauty of the sunrise and then the beauty of the sunset. The beauty of you can even say the beauty of lunar eclipses and solar eclipses. You know, we are the only creature, and I like to point this out to people that have a doubt. Well, how do you know there's a God? Because I look at the sunset and marvel at it, and the dog could care less. That's how I know.
Absolutely.
How do you know you were created? And the dog, because the ape doesn't. Apes' brain same size as ours. Apes do not gather at the end of the What do they call that at the end of the jungle? It starts with an S. Anyways, the savannah. They don't gather at the end of the savannah to await the sunrise and gaze at it.
I'm also a little bit shocked that a good southern man like you should suggest that. That at the edge of Georgia, there's a savannah. That suggests that Georgia is a jungle or something. Part of it are, Atlanta particularly, but most of it's still pretty good stuff.
It is pretty good stuff. But I'm reminded, and I just took I'm taking a history course. Imagine I'm back to school at 57 years old. Taking a college history course taught by the St. Benedict Center's St. Augustine Institute for Catholic Studies. And in our first lesson, we went through the days of creation with Sister Philomena, and I never stopped to think about these things. Everyone should read the creation story, I think, at least once a year, just to remind you of how fortunate and blessed we are to be here. And Sister goes to the order of creation. Now, this is fascinating to me. So we're told in introductory physical science that... photosynthesis, right, is this process by which the sun takes what's in the plants and turns it green, and that's why the plants are green and this and that and the other, and that the sun does this and the sun is responsible for this, and if you throw sunlight on this, it'll grow and all that. If you go through the order of creation, the sun is created on a totally separate day before plants are created. Talk about mind blown. You could meditate for the remainder of Lent on that, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, actually, one of the remarkable things about Genesis, the Genesis account, is the order in which the story of creation is told. It does actually completely parallel what science tells us the order things happen. So it's not, you know, if anything, we should be astonished that science is actually confirming what the story in the Bible says, because, you know, there's no contradiction here. I mean, you talk about 6 days, and of course, you know, 6 days, we can argue about what that means, but as the day we experience is the earth moving one revolution, and as in the first day there was no earth, clearly the sort of cosmic or divine days being spoken about in the Bible are not meant to be 24 hours, so that sort of argument that the scientistic fundamentalists use it just does not hold water.
Okay, Joseph Pierce, the author of many books. Let's talk about one of your books, since we're in the book affair here today. And I choose the book about Tolkien. I have a friend that combed the internet for 2 solid days, and he finally found the headstone of J.R. Tolkien, who apparently is buried, very touchingly, with his wife. Did you know that?
I did. I've actually visited the grave, and it's in just north of Oxford, and it's actually a shrine. I love it when you go there. I mean, they clean it away. The people. I mean, it's not a Catholic site. So they clean it away periodically. But basically, it's like a shrine. There are always rosaries, draped over the gravestone, draped over the plants that decorate the grave area. So it actually has become something of a shrine to J.R.R. Tolkien. Yes, and he's buried side by side with his wife, and indeed, I believe that his son, who was a Jesuit priest, is also buried right next to that as well.
Well, if he was Tolkien's son, he must have been a good Jesuit priest.
Well, yeah, he's a pre-Vatican II Jesuit priest. That should hopefully says all we need to know.
Okay, so time is short here today. I want to close our talk with Lord Chamberlain Pierce today with a little meditation on Lent. And on the one and only Gilbert Keith Chesterton, David Simpson was talking to Father Jambon yesterday, and Father said something about rivers and about Lent. And David jumped in and said, well, it just reminds me of that quote from Chesterton. And I think this is it's either in Orthodoxy or Everlasting Man, where he says that only a living thing can swim upstream against the current. A dead thing, anything can be thrown into a river and float with the current, but only the living can go against the stream. And I think that that's a great way to meditate upon Lent. If you're trying to be penitent and you're doing it, it doesn't matter what your penance is. If you're trying to be penitent and mortify yourself during Lent, in this fallen, corporeal, material-obsessed world, We are Chestertons, aren't we? We're all swimming against quite a cultural downstream, aren't we?
Yeah, anything in our culture of hedonism, which does not center ourselves in self-indulgence, is countercultural. So in other words, any act of penance, any act of self-sacrifice, and we do need to always be reminding ourselves that self-sacrifice is another word for love. Love is about self-sacrifice. So in other words, we live in a world that doesn't believe in love in that real sense, and every act of penance is an act of self-sacrifice, which is an act of love. So yes, it's countercultural, and ultimately it's the season of love as fully understood in the Christian understanding of the word.
And Chesterton, of course, was it Everlasting Man? I think it was Everlasting Man, that quote about the streamer.
You know, I cannot actually remember where it's from. It's one of those famous quotes by Chesterton that many people know, but I'm not very good at sources, generally speaking.
Oh, and I've got one more one thing more for you. You know this thing in common that you and I and KV have? I got to add a name to this, with this devotion and this wonderful string of returned, of answered prayers from Our Lady at Walsingham and her child Jesus. I had mentioned to you the UK journalist Caroline Farrow.
Yes.
Well, guess who also has, and at least partly thanks Our Lady at Walsingham and her child Jesus and her devotion to it for her entrance into journalism, Caroline. So, like,
wow.
And Joseph and I, if you don't know, and you can get this on demand, it's one of the best shows that Joseph and I ever did, and he did a lot of good ones. I was a part of them. And it was all roads lead to Walsingham. And what has happened since then is just nothing short of providential. I met KV. I have been working with KV. Joseph has wonderful personal stories to tell about Our Lady at Walsingham and her child Jesus' intervention in his life. There's just many things that have occurred for both of us. And now, as a result of this, again, you can just add Caroline Farrow. So yep. She just keeps giving them. Isn't that amazing?
That's wonderful. And it's wonderful, especially as we're talking about Our Lady of Walsingham and the special place she has in our hearts, knowing that that's another way in which we can see her as a kindred spirit is edifying.
And you know, just one final thing. Father Jambon was talking to David yesterday about Lent, and he was talking about edifying, about how we have to, and Brother Andre Marie did a show here on the Crusade Channel, about how each other, and you talk about this all the time, old friend, about how, look, we can't all be running around with these pigpen dark clouds over our heads. We're Christians, for heaven's sake. Where do we expect to be opposed? Where do we expect to be mocked? Where do we expect to have calumny hurled upon us? It's our job through that to be the opposite, right?
Yeah, I mean, to be a witness. I mean, the word martyr and the word witness are the same word. Martyr is the Greek word for witness. That we're called to witness, and we witness best in adversity. In other words, when we are being attacked, when we're being persecuted, when we're being crucified, if you like, is when we are most powerful as witnesses. And so we shouldn't be worried about the growth of secularism and the growth of persecution, because basically it's not about this world anyway, it's about eternity. And the way that we get converts and to the faith, and the way we get ourselves to heaven under grace, is through witnessing, through martyrdom. So we should actually be joyful in the midst of the sorrows. I mean, that again, another part of the mystery of the Rosary is that those three mysteries, the joyful, the sorrowful, and the glorious, are in some ways Trinitarian, that you can't actually separate the cross from the resurrection, and therefore you can't separate the suffering from the glory. And therefore, you know, we should actually look, I mean, it's much easier said than done, but we should actually look forward to the opportunity to witness in adversity.
Okay, and you're going to get a great lesson on this when Michael Whitcraft of the TFP joins us in the last hour. Okay, so Joseph, I want to thank you for your time. The first ever Joseph Pierce Book Fair continues on until the end of the program today, or to 3 p.m. Eastern, whichever comes first. 7 volumes, all signed by Joseph. Noted on what feast day he signed them. Great works we have through the eyes of Shakespeare. Right?
Through Shakespeare's eyes.
Through Shakespeare's eyes.
Close enough.
Through Shakespeare's eyes, Tolkien, Man and Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, Small is Still Beautiful, Literary Giants, Literary Converts, and Innocence and Wisdom, that's a biography of Chesterton, right?
Yes, that was my first ever published book.
A biography of G.K. What? Oh, and also Joseph's book about Narnia. More on Narnia, further up, further in. Great resources for all you homeschoolers and for anyone that wishes to read. Okay, my friend, it's been a great 20 minutes. Thank you very much. Next time, let's make it 22 minutes.
Any time with you is always pleasant, so thanks for having me as always, Mike. God bless you.
Bless you, too. That's the one and only Joseph Pierce. Okay.